This is a HeadGum Original.
Yeah, my feelings about Green Day. I don't know. We've done like a whole show's worth of small talk leading up to this point. We've just spent the last 45 minutes setting up what we're talking about. Peeing your pants. Learning about yourself on Facebook. Too many things to recount, and I need to really switch modes here. I got to get my head in the game and start thinking about what are my feelings about Green Day. I have a strong sense memory of seeing Roxanne Ayers wear a Green Day shirt to middle school and knowing that like this band is really happening. They're extremely cool. All of my friends are into Green Day, and I really wasn't. They didn't hit for you? The first single, Basket Case, Do You Have the Time? You know, am I just paranoid? Am I just stoned? Did not hit for me. It just was too annoying. Like the guy literally whining and then singing about how he's whining. Mm. I can't take the whining. They are successfully making punk more pop and it's grating to me. And so I resented Green Day for a while. This is not for me, even though culturally I'm exactly adjacent to like all the listeners that they had. Fast forward like maybe a year or so, I was in the radio and this like absolutely slapping hard rock song comes on that had this sick guitar riff descending at the top. And I was like, man, what is this? God, this is really cool. And sure enough, it's like the lead single off of their second album. I was like, damn it. Green Day got me. Now I like Green Day.
I think
that song is called Brain Stew.
I have this vivid memory of Basket Case hitting. I loved it. I loved Basket Case when it came out. And I was hanging out with my friend's much older, I thought much cooler sister, Hannah Heilemann, who was like not only 4 or 5 years older than us, but she'd skipped a couple grades. So she was like someone I never socially interacted with because she's like 6 or 7 grades in front of me. And like me and Nick being like, this new song, Basket Case, is pretty cool. And Hannah being like, ugh. Green Day used to be cool, but they totally sold out.
Oh, no.
And at every moment in Green Day's career that something crazier and bigger happened to them, the dang graduation song, I Hope You Had the Time of Your Life, The Boulevard of Broken Dreams, American Idiot, the musical, I just always think, like, how's Hannah handling us?
They used to be cool. Back when they were on an indie label just trying to get to the skate park because they're still in middle school.
Yeah.
If Hannah Heilemann thought that they had sold out by the time Dookie came out in like whatever that was, 1994, 1995.
Yeah, that's their first major label record. Technically, they had two albums before that.
I hope she was able to let it go, because if she still was hanging on to how cool Green Day was in 1990 through 1993, the last 30 years has just been a hell for her. I can only imagine. Just more and more selling out, just looking back at Basket Case and being like, if only I'd realized how non-selling out this was.
Yeah, once you get into that mindset of only liking the cool thing when nobody knows about it, you're destined for a life of pain.
That's true, yeah.
That's a painful life, as you see the thing that you like because it's artistically good then become popular over and over again. That happens a lot.
Yes. Yeah, it's tough. You know, I saw Father John Misty play the Knitting Factory here in New York City. You know, that's maybe a 200-seater. Felt very cool. Saw him again a year or two later at Terminal 5. It's maybe a 5,000-seater. The people at that second show were not very cool anymore.
Wow.
The other people, I was judging them. There's a lot of fratty people talking through the show and just getting hammered. Mm-hmm. Where like at the 200-seater show, you feel like, wow, this is a bunch of artistes that really get this. But you can still go home and put the record on. Maybe you don't want to go to the show anymore.
You can still
record's
be a,
still good.
A mist head in the privacy of your own living room. No. You know, I used
Plus
to be into
heads.
This. I used to be into this really little known vegetable called kale.
Yeah.
And then it got super popular. I'm not into it anymore. Okay, Green Day got extremely popular. Dookie, their first major label album, sold about 1 billion copies. And then, it did actually sell in the tens of millions. It went diamond. And then, even though their other albums didn't sell quite as much. They still sold enormous amounts, but was considered a like step back for them. Somehow American Idiot was a resurgence, and that's why I'm so excited to get to talk about this song today. And we have an amazing guest on our show. Welcome back to the show, Joanna Hausman, who has been on Punch Up the Jam before, friend of the pod, friend of the show, did an absolutely amazing episode with us several months ago on Gasolina by Daddy Yankee. She is a very accomplished comedian who I highly recommend you follow her podcast, Hyphenated. It talks about all sorts of really fascinating cultural stuff, but she's also head writer on the show Hamster and Gretel, among other things. Joanna, welcome back to the show.
Welcome back.
I mean, look at us. Look at us. Just three brothers doing a pod, you know? Happy to be back. I feel like now I'm officially invited to Thanksgiving. Like, this is my second appearance on the podcast. I feel like that's what was needed to be part of the fam.
Yeah, and you're coyly referring to when we went on your show and you anointed yourself honorary Gregory brother.
Yes, that was yesterday. I had you on my podcast and I forced it. And then I sort of coyly was like, I'm happy to do your podcast whenever you want. Like tomorrow, I'm free. I'm free tomorrow, baby.
Well, what was it, Joanna, that made you decide to talk about the ultimate sellouts of all time, Green Day?
So I have to say that I have this memory of being in I think it was fifth grade, and asking this kid called Ian to burn a CD with Green Day, Sum 41, Blink 182, to give to my crush.
Okay.
Wow.
Ian wasn't your crush.
No.
Not your crush.
You're using your relationship with Ian.
No, I paid him.
Okay.
What?
Yeah, I paid him $10 and he burned it.
He had a CD burner.
Yes.
This is his job. He's just a mercenary.
He was like 10, but it was his job in the moment. Yeah, he was part of the black market.
Was he printing covers? Was he at that level of piracy that he was printing a cover for you? Or it's just like... He's just giving you the disc.
Do you remember when you would print the cover, you would put it in different colors, you would cut it out, and then you'd put it in the little like plastic slider thing? Mm-hmm. He did that for me. And I remember.
God bless Ian. $10 is a lot of money in middle school and in the 90s.
You know, I think he's made it. I think he's a successful businessman now. I'd like to believe. I actually have no idea.
You have no idea. You don't know.
I have no idea what he's up to. But I remember Green Day being that band that was accessible enough for me, because I liked pop and that wasn't cool to like Britney Spears and to like Christina Aguilera, but I freaking loved it. The simpler, the better, the more quote unquote girly, the more I liked it. And then Green Day came and I was like, okay, this isn't scary. This is like, I feel like this is diet rock and I can be cool by like liking it. And I liked it all right. But I think it was more this facade. And I think a lot of children in that time, it was like the perfect intro to this type of rock.
There's a theatricality to Green Day. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the literal makeup.
Yes.
There's the posturing. Like they're, even though they're like in the pop world, their melodies are a little more bombastic. You know, which recalls pop music. So it feels rebellious. Yeah.
For like a suburban teen who, you know, is a little bored and thinks that their life is sad.
You just summed the whole thing up. Like, that's it.
I Sum 41 the whole thing.
You Sum 41 the whole Blink 182.
It's more rebellious than Britney, but you're not having to go full goth or full metal.
Totally.
Or the sort of stuff that really makes your parents have a sit down conversation with you and be like, Joanna.
Although my mom, I remember playing it kind of to sound cool to my siblings, I remember once, and my mom was like, ¿Qué es esto? Ay, Dios mío. Horrible, horrible. Like, I couldn't play it because it was satanic sounding.
Yeah, and once you as a teenager play a song that mentions being stoned, then your parents at least have to question, like, are you getting stoned?
I'm kind of embarrassed to admit that I thought Green Day was like, I thought it was like an anti-war name, like, oh, instead of like D-Day, it's Green Day. And then
they just love getting stoned that much. They were like, what if our name was Green Day? This weed is green.
God, the simplicity. I think what is so ultimately like frustrating to me when I listen back and when I like learn more about Green Day is how in its moment when I was a kid, it felt so revolutionary and rebellious and like accessible, And now when I listen and look back, it's the simplicity of everything.
Yeah.
That felt complex.
At age 14, you're like, I hope I do have the time of my life.
Honestly, I hope I did and do, you know? And I hope that I'm never as sad as a guy walking down a boulevard, just being sad for no clear reason.
So was Boulevard on the CD or was another
on the mix CD?
On the mix CD that
I think it was There's Something Unpredictable.
But I hope you have the time of your life.
Yeah, I hope you have the time of your life. I know was on it. And then I know Boulevard of Broken Dreams I listened to when that crush didn't work out. So wow. It was like a breakup anthem for me. So the Green Day started it. Like, I knew my crush like Green Day. He was kind of like a rebellious kid, but he really wasn't at all. He was just, I literally think I was 10. I don't remember. Yeah. What age are you at, like fifth grade?
Yeah, 10. You're turning 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because time of your life is like, that's a very good entryway from a person who likes pop and is a child to get into rock music because it's not really that rocking. Time of your life, that's a ballad that could have been sung by Amy Grant.
Yes.
Straight up.
Yes. Yes, it really could.
So it was your gateway.
And there's like violins in it and shit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Nee, 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 nee.
Because like... they're straight up angling to make this a commencement song.
Wait.
Oh.
Did Green Day sell out?
Guys.
What?
Wait.
What?
Oh, they sold out to try to get the graduation song placement.
Those graduation dollars.
Vitamin C was taking all those graduation nickels with her song, As We Go On. But that was too, I remember when we were voting between songs, it was either that song or the Green Day song. All the boys were like, yeah, that's a lame song. I don't want to sing Vitamin C. I want to sing Green Day.
Wait, what are you voting on here?
It was either Vitamin C's As We Go, the graduation song.
Graduation, of course.
It's
called Graduation Song.
Yeah. I think so. It's called Graduation Song.
Yes.
And then Green Day's I Hope You Had the Time of Your Life.
Mm-hmm.
And
to do what?
To sing for our graduation, for our sixth grade graduation.
Evan, sixth grade Evan graduation.
Evan over here is like trapped in a Abbott and Costello's Who's On First. Like, we're voting on the graduation song. Yeah, it's called the graduation song. It's like, no, but we're voting for the graduation song. You already said it's the graduation song.
Which song?
Which song are you singing?
But are you going to have the time of your life?
And you know what? We did not. We didn't. We didn't.
You sang Time of Your Life?
We sang Time of Your Life, and it was terrible. It was bad. But then, you know, I felt like, and I'm going to admit, there's times that I listen to Boulevard of Broken Dreams when I'm feeling emo.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I get bad news or when I'm in the car and just, I don't know, feeling down. It's my self-loathing song. It's a song and self-pity. It's the perfect self-pity, self-loathing song.
And it's all there in the title. You hardly even have to listen to the song. You just have to think, Boulevard of Broken Dreams. The broken dreams are there.
Yes.
The cinematic boulevard is there. This ain't a street.
No.
This ain't an alley. This is a boulevard. There's so many broken dreams, they had to make the street wider.
Yeah, there's a
with
median.
With a nice grassy median. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
there's a median of regret.
It's all there.
Yeah. Yeah. A passing lane of reminiscing.
I love this.
Boulevard is so wide.
There's so much meaning. I feel like, here's the thing. I think you guys are putting too much meaning into it, but I do appreciate seeking meaning into this song.
Yeah.
Because I got to admit, I did a little research.
Thank God somebody did some friggin' research around here.
And I did research not because of I researched this on my own, okay? Like when I was a kid, I don't remember when. I was like, why the F is this called Boulevard of Broken? They don't reference, they reference him walking. And like, where's the broken dreams part? I guess, I'm very confused. And I think I was like at a store in Florida that was selling posters, and there was a poster there of this. It was basically a parody of a Edward Hopper painting. So yes. The original Edward Hopper painting is called, I think, Nighthawks.
The famous one with the diner.
Yeah. So it's a diner painting. It's from like 1941. Apparently it was like right after Pearl Harbor, and it was supposed to represent like this, you know, this isolation and feeling alone. And but in Americana, in this diner.
Yeah, it's like isolation it's of a urban night. Life. Yes. It's kind of a, it's you're like looking down kind of into a diner, and there's these three people alone in the diner, and someone's behind the counter.
And that, and Nighthawks is like a beautiful, but then there's like a parody of it that's like horrible. And it's called Boulevard of Broken Dreams, and it's the same image, except for like the random people in the diner. They're replaced by like Marilyn Monroe, Humphrey Bogart, James Dean, and like Elvis Presley. Like the perfect crappy parody to sell at a crappy Florida poster store.
It's kind of like a painting of dogs playing poker.
It's precisely.
If it was taking itself seriously. If the person who is like, the person who's painting dogs playing poker is like, well, I'm just doing this for fun. And then they're like, I'm going to make the most serious, like that same person with the same level of skill, because those dogs playing poker paintings, they're good.
They're very
good.
Technically,
yeah.
Respect.
The dogs look photorealistic.
But when that person who's poisoned their mind by painting dogs playing poker for years and years is like, it's time for me to paint a serious work of art. Paints like just Humphrey Bogart and
how dare you come on our show and denigrate this work in which an artist has taken known pieces of our popular culture and put it into another work. I dare refer to this as remix culture. This person has remixed a famous painting, and you come on here and slander it to our faces.
Okay, listen. I love remix culture. I like remix culture when you're adding something and making it feel different. But you're taking... Look at the levels of remix here. You're taking Edward Hopper, then you're putting a bunch of famous people in it. So by the way, died in tragic ways. And you're now adding this sort of meaning that is sort of adjacent to the original meaning. It isn't a new meaning.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? Mm-hmm. We're kind of going far afield here, because we should focus on the dumbest thing about this. And the dumbest thing about it isn't even how dumb the painting is. The dumbest thing about it is that Billy Joe Armstrong...
Yes.
Was like, wait, this painting is called what?
Boulevard.
The Boulevard of Broken Dreams. And just grabbed his pen and his guitar and his guitar pick and played this.
I like to imagine he wrote this in a Florida poster shop.
I am certain he did. Or Las Vegas.
Oh, we're into it. I'm just gonna stop. Like, to be quite frank, this is all you need of the song. Like, he summed it up.
That's
it. I walk a lonely road, the only road I've ever known. Done.
That's it.
He did it. He packed the message of the song right up front in the very first line. And Joanna said, like, I think there's no meaning to this song. I can't believe I was trying to find meaning. I have to differ with you, because Billy Joe 1000% is like, I'm gonna make a song that's so friggin' rich with meaning. This song's gonna be dripping with hard-ass meaning that teens love. I feel lonely. You know who else feels lonely? 100 million teens.
But everyone's alone. We all feel the same.
Yeah.
But I'm alone. That's what I find lack of meaning there. It's an anthem of feeling lonely. And we've discussed in the past, anthems are about bringing people together. So it brings people together in being lonely.
Yeah.
So are you lonely?
I do like to imagine a bunch of like California punks putting this on, like in their mom's basement, and being like, dude, I feel alone. Don't you feel alone, bro? And then like maybe they hug and cry at the end of it.
I mean, I like that. I like that image.
It could happen. But speaking of bros hugging and crying, I've watched the video for this a number of times, so it comes back to me just when the opening chord hits, and I picture the three longtime members of Green Day walking down this fictional road together, all three of them.
Not alone.
As they have for 20 years of their career at this point. These three dudes walk a very freaking close-knit road.
Yeah, it's like as Billy Joe Armstrong is saying, like, I walk alone, I'm looking at all three of them, and I'm like, who are Trey Cool and Mike Dirt?
What about
Chopped Liver?
What about Trey Cool?
What about Trey Cool?
As I've been screaming for years, what about Trey Cool?
It's like, were their feelings hurt when they shot the video? They're like, Billy Joe, we're right here. Their feelings weren't hurt.
Their feelings were fine.
They were walking lonely all the way to the bank.
Yeah, very yes. cynically, I think their eyes were rolling back like Porky Pig when the dollar signs come up, yeah. you know?
Yeah.
We walk a really lonely road.
There's two things at the beginning of the song, though, that I think for me are making it work.
Okay.
As an anthem, even as I look down my nose at the crossover between the three of them walking down the road in the video and like, wait a minute, you walk along? One is the rad guitar sound up top with the kind of like the echo yeah. he has on his amp.
I think it's a tremolo pedal.
The tremolo pedal that's cutting in and out. I don't know. It's just like it's a very apt. It's somehow, there's something apt about it.
They did it.
It sounds lonely.
They figured out the sound of the guitar that sounds lonely. They did it.
And it does feel cinematic in that it feels like an environment.
Yeah.
You know?
And then you have the acoustic guitar on top of it. That's nice.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just like this foundation of rhyming that makes it work for me. Like technically the lyrics, like when I zoom out, I'm kind of like, wow, is this like a little too obvious? Is this a little dumb because it's so obvious? But the technical like internal rhyming of it makes it just like all locked together for me in this very satisfying song.
See, for me, we'll continue listening, but what I feel this song is a thesis statement said over and over again. Mm-hmm. Instead of like, let's build. Where are we building to? We're here. Let's like follow up with some reasons why we're here. And let's conclude. Here it's just like, just thesis statement on repeat is my opinion.
You think we never get off the
thesis statement? Yeah, you want to hear some evidence presented at trial. Right, well, let's proceed and see, is this building or are we just restating?
Let's see.
I walk this empty street.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, there's the song title.
Still the same.
She said that.
Yeah, he said that. He said it.
He's saying it again.
I'm the only one.
He's alone. I think he's alone.
Yeah. I do. I'll pause right here before he really lifts up to the chorus here. Like, have we heard anything new? Or maybe we could just consider this whole stanza is the presentation of the thesis. I'm on the boulevard of broken dreams.
It's at night. Everyone's
I'm lonely.
Asleep.
And in case you don't know the definition of the word lonely, I'm by myself.
Yeah, there we go.
Eh?
But is that adding to the thesis or is that repeating it? I think it's repeating.
Oh, very, very much repeating. I don't know. It reminds me of like, you're just trying to fill time at a microphone and you're like, there I was at the scene of the crime. Yeah. It's where the crime took place.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, say this, put the subject before the verb, then try it after the verb. You get some variations, you know?
Absolutely.
Guys, we're here with Joanna Hausman. And yeah. Joanna Hausman stopped by studio today.
And I'm here.
Yeah. Present and accounted for. Gang's all here. Okay, we got to the end of, we call that a verse, and now we're ready for the B part where they bring in the rock guitars. I think, speaking a little bit cynically, I don't want to be too down on it because, like Andrew said, like it's musically working. The tremolo guitar just like it immediately conjures a scene. But thinking cynically, there's sort of like some signifiers that you have to put out sonically to indicate to a radio audience what you're about to hear. Mm-hmm. So you like keep people's attention in the first few seconds. A rock guitar came in, so people know I'm listening to a rock band, not
yes.
Christina Aguilera. You know, on Z100, you could get any one of these things. But then, 5 seconds in, there's an acoustic guitar, chummy chum chum. So you know it's not the up-tempo lead single from Blink-182's Next New Thing. Once you hear the acoustic guitar layered in, you know it's about to be sensitive.
Oh,
you know,
look at
just
that.
Like just the building blocks that signify a little bit of like where this song sits in culture, like have to be placed out in order as you hear the opening seconds of this song. Guys, we're rock band, so obviously start with the guitar, but it needs to be a little cinematic. Let's use some pedal. What pedal you got over there, Trey? I mean, Mike, it's actually Billy Joel. He's the only guitar player. But then, but listen, this song, I'm doing some serious introspection. Better break out the acoustic.
Oh, like it surprises you. It's selling you one thing, then surprising you with another thing. And mm-hmm. merging it together.
Yeah.
I'm finding it extremely difficult to say Billy Joe Armstrong instead of Billy Joel Armstrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
and now
tough.
I'm really wishing that there was a performer out there who was a Billy Joel Armstrong in like a cabaret.
Guaranteed it, there is. You know, I'm not going to Google it right now because I'm in the middle of a record, but I beg of my audience who is listening on their phone and also sitting at their desktop, please Google Billy Joel Armstrong. Then tell Google, no, I didn't mean Billy Joe Armstrong. And see if there's like a great video at like a dueling piano bar or something like that. Please send it to us.
I just desperately want to hear someone performing Basket Case, Boulevard of Broken Dreams, etc. in the style of Billy Joel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a stage act that kills.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yep.
I am an innocent man, neurotic to the bone, no doubt about it.
I love that. Oh my God. I would buy a ticket. A cheap one.
The name Billy Joel Armstrong has just always been funny to me, period, because the like first name Joe, middle name construct, is just so like kind of redneck in nature. Yeah. So it's so little boy that like, you know how like the sound of a certain name makes you think of an archetype. Like, yes. Billy Joe Armstrong is a NASCAR driver.
It doesn't even sound 100%. Like a NASCAR driver. It sounds like a character in Talladega Nights. It sounds like whoever's writing Talladega Nights is like, what's a name that's too NASCAR?
A little too on the nose. NASCAR.
Because his name could be William Joseph Armstrong.
Yeah.
And that is or a dentist.
It could have been a complete fiction like Trey Cool.
Trey Cool-ay.
Yeah. Whose name is actually, this is the drummer for Green Day, his name is actually something like Frank Edwin Ernst or something. I'm botching that.
He's German, so he presumably has a German name.
Okay, his actual name is Frank Edwin Wright. The third, three became Trey.
Oh, okay, so there's some meaning in
there.
You
can't be in a punk band if you're a third.
No, you cannot.
You gotta drop the
third.
That's
generational wealth, you know? And you don't want to show that.
Yeah, at least it smacks of generational wealth.
And it's like, oh, sure. I'm against society and I'm a rebel. Like, you can't be a third.
You can be a junior. Just like my dad and my granddad. Yeah. It's kind of a family thing.
You know, I didn't really think of Trey Cool as being rich, but now actually some other details I read about their bio, like how Trey Cool's dad, Frank Wright the second, Frank Wright Jr., really supported the development of the band and like tricked out a van to be their tour bus and stuff. That does sound a little generationally wealthy.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know.
Major song fact.
Okay, let's get into this chorus where we get like some really tasty rock guitars. My shadow's the only one that walks beside me.
It's a
ooh.
Saying it again.
Find me. I wish. But until someone finds me, I walk. Listen, he said, my shadow's the only one who walks beside me. Again, I beg of you. I beg of you. What about Mike and Trey Cool?
They're right there in the video. They're right there in the video.
Walking beside you.
They look just as sad. It's not like they're happy and you're sad and so they're ignoring your feelings. They have their hands in their pockets. Their hands are down.
Quite frankly, they're not singing the lead vocal and they look sadder.
They're all just Charlie Browning along.
So wait, I'm embarrassed to say, I don't remember the music video. So they're all walking on the same...
Like, alone. It looks sort of like a Western town, like an empty town.
And they're on a, get this, boulevard.
Okay. Okay.
Sorry, it starts out kind of dirt roady, honestly. But yeah, eventually, as they just walk, they get into a town. Seems urban-ish. You could maybe call it a boulevard, and there's other people walking around. The video has a really gritty, grainy, destroyed film kind of look to it. Looks sort of like a period look. Yeah. And, you know, kind of sad to say I ended up watching the behind the scenes on how they made the music video on this. And it sort of raised, like, a lot of questions for me about the label and where they're putting their money. Like, for me, I just assumed the whole time that this thing is on green screen because of the way it looks. They're just walking. You can tell they're not really...
Walking?
Well, you can tell they're not really in the place that's being depicted. Like, it's a background that's been put behind them.
Oh, so this whole thing, it's all green screen.
So it feels like green screen. So you assume that's what it is because that's the technology of our time. No. In the behind the scenes, I learned that they are walking in a giant airplane hangar, the biggest studio they could rent, which in terms of Hollywood studios means very, very big. A huge airplane hangar. They are walking on an enormously long custom conveyor belt so that it looks like they're walking in place. And then all the backgrounds are on a huge rear projection screen. World record size rear projection screen where the production team has gone out and shot landscapes and and urbanscapes and whatever. And they're, instead of doing green screen in a affordable, economical studio, they just spent gobs of money on this day with like dozens and dozens of union production people for this huge rear projection screen so that Green Day can walk in front of the images live while they lip sync.
They spent so much money on this album. This album was like a kind of like anti-Bush, Bush era rock opera.
Mm-hmm.
American Idiot.
I think they stayed in a hotel for 5 months while they were recording it, which is just an absurd amount of money. They talked about like, this is when we really knew we were rock stars, which is also kind of dumb because like all of your other albums have gone platinum. So you were already a rock star. But okay, if staying in a hotel for 5 months is what makes you really feel like a rock star, great.
I mean, there's mini fridges. So I don't. I think you're ignoring the power of a mini fridge.
If you're in the hotel for 5 months, do you think they upgrade you to a normal size fridge at some point? Like 2 or 3 weeks in, they're just like, Mr. Billy Joe Armstrong, we're just going to bring you a normal size.
I think so. I think you get the normal fridge because when you book those rooms, it's not just the regular old, you know, room 305 at the Homewood Suites. You're staying there for that long. You're staying in the corner. You're in the honeymoon suite with the full-size fridge and a kitchenette. For
and there's nothing honeymooners like more than big fridges.
100%.
Honeymooners are like, well, hey, where's my fridge?
Where am I going to put the leftovers from the shrimp scampi that I got at Buca di Beppo?
I want to buy a gallon of milk for no reason.
But the rock opera, I mean, they had this whole rock opera idea. They'd lost an album. Someone stole the tapes and they... After the tapes were stolen, they were like, ah, let's just start over. And they wrote this whole rock opera. And this song is like, there's two songs in a row. One song is about how cool it is to be in the city. Like, I moved to the city. What a cool thing. I have no idea what this has to do with George Bush, but apparently it does. And then this is the song that's like the come down. Like, oh, it was cool to move to the city, but now I'm all alone. With my two friends I moved to the city with.
James Dean and Elvis.
Which... I mean, you know, I know I came into this saying that I think this song tries to be meaningful, but it isn't. But if you think about it, if you take the original painting, Nighthawks, 1941, right after Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm. Edward Hopper.
Edward Hopper. Then you take this, which is Bush era, Iraq war, another war, you know.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There is maybe some symbolism there, but maybe instead of calling it a boulevard of broken dreams, you should have called it Nighthawks.
Just skipped the intermediate dogs playing poker painting and gone straight to
the remix should have been done of the original. Wow. It's a remix of the remix.
Yeah. I didn't follow your line of thought at all, but it sounded very meaningful.
That's fire.
Thank you. That happens to me all the time with my ADD. I'm like, did you see where I got to? And people are like, you started with Perfumes and ended with Iran.
You went back to where you started and then you kept going.
And
you're
loved it
backwards.
For me.
You're behind where you started.
Honestly, that's amazing. And I'm on this boulevard behind you guys as you guys explain this to me.
When you guys think of this song, do you think of the chorus or do you just think of the verse where he's talking about the boulevard?
Just the only the verse. All I think of is, great question, what do you think of when you think of this song? We should ask this on every episode. And all I think of is, I walk a lonely road.
You just think of the first line.
Done. Yeah, the chorus is
hooky
though.
Because it's the thesis.
Exactly. It's the thesis.
The one thing I think about from the chorus,
I don't think about my shallow heart.
Is that last leading. Chord? No. The last chord is cool on the chorus.
Walk alone. I'll take it back a few seconds because you got
that chord.
Of a,
I think of that chord, and I think of the first verse.
Yeah, you got like a surprise
agree.
Chord.
What's
here?
That chord? Is it like a major three or something?
Mm-hmm, it is.
It's a major three.
It's a major.
Gonna celebrate. Got that one out before Evan.
Wow, a pausing. Andrew did a music theory thing. Wow, good job, Andrew.
Didn't even look that up before.
Nope.
Guess that every time. Cut it out every other time. When
you know,
I'm wrong.
You had 12 options. 1 out of 12 times, Andrew, the broken clock will get that.
That's
right.
That's not true. That's not true. That's a trap. You're trying to let me go along with that. And I know that there's at least 2 different kinds of chords, major and minor. So there's at least 24 options.
I'm so lost.
Yeah. this is a great music theory victory for me.
The only thing I know about music in like the theory aspect is like C.
Okay.
Just how that sounds.
How that is a note?
Yeah.
Okay, let's hear it. Sing
that
this.
Is a note. Okay.
Yeah, that's it. She got
that's it.
She got it. She got it. That's a C.
Guys, I think
middle C.
I could be.
That's
a musician.
Actually a different note. That note is called knee.
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 Knee. Knee.
Yeah, that'd be the worst pop quiz everywhere if I just asked guests to come on and just have perfect pitch. Just sing a C, go.
But I like, just pretend that they're right and it'll make them feel amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, I know you guys were joking, but for a moment I believed it.
Yeah.
I thought I did hit C. Yeah.
C. I don't actually know because I don't have perfect pitch. I'd have to play a C and then compare
it. Is it?
Yep, that's it. You got it. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's a C, yes.
No, that's lower than a C. But anyway, It was a C. I do have a clip. I do have a clip here of Mariah Carey telling her own backup singers that they're singing the wrong note.
Somebody's doing the wrong note.
In the middle of a show. That's one of my favorite clips. Okay, what happens after this chorus? Oh, this, we call this in the biz, we might call this a post-chorus. Because you're kind of feeling, it's an interlude. You're feeling a little time before
they're
you
like,
get back to the verse.
What if we put the whining in with a whining noise? Just a literal whining.
Yes.
But like I said, foundation of internal rhyme here. Mind and time.
You like it?
I am into it.
Sorry, I missed the whole verse. I got to go back. Let me listen. What the together. Heck are they talking about here?
They're just the same thing.
I'm walking down the line.
Down the line. What's that?
This the
sidewalk.
I mean, like he's on the double yellow?
I think he's... It's a metaphor, Evan. But it's also literal. It's double meaning. It's deep.
All right, we still walks alone.
No.
Okay, now you know it's a rock song. He said
that's,
a baddie.
That's, and that's also how you know they haven't sold out. He says the F word still.
Yeah, he said the F word.
This guy hasn't sold out.
They haven't sold out. What do you mean, read between the lines? This is the most literal song.
Yeah, he was...
Read between the lines.
I'm walking a lonely road.
He's fucking lonely and he's walking alone. Like, what
else? In
his
mind, is he like, this is a metaphor? Because in the song, this is a deep metaphor, because in the song, I'm lonely and walking on a road. But in real life, I was just lonely and my life is the road.
Okay.
My life. Yeah. He's like, that's a metaphor. Yeah.
And I need to tell my audience to read between the lines. Yeah.
Maybe you're not getting what I'm saying here.
This is not literal. I'm not actually walking.
On a road.
Yes. I'm not, and this isn't actually a boulevard of literal dreams broken on the ground. This is a metaphor.
It's like the poor man's Robert Frost fork in the woods.
There we go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I took the lonely road less traveled by.
There's only one road, and the road is lonely.
Two roads diverged in a wood.
There were three of us, Frost. And I was alone.
Yep. My shallow heart.
Heart's the only thing that's beating.
Yeah. Yeah, left beating, like everything else has died and gone away. Who's up there? I'm intrigued by that.
I wish someone could find me. Unfortunately, I'm all alone with these two other guys that I've been hanging out with for the last 25 years. If only someone could find me.
I am intrigued about it. He's like, someone up there.
Who is that?
Someone, yeah, who is up there? Is it God?
Oh my gosh, so now is this vaguely religious? Is this creed?
Is he trying to find God, or is this more like he wants President Bush to find him?
I feel like it probably has something to do with the rest of the rock opera that I refuse to care about. Yeah. I mean, they later made this into an actual Broadway musical.
Yeah,
if I'd seen
Broadway.
The Broadway musical, if I had really delved into the whole rock opera, I feel like you'd probably find out who someone up there is, but I refuse to find out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
guess it could be God. I guess it could be God. His name on the album is Jesus. He's Jesus of Suburbia.
Wait, whose name on the album?
There's a character who's doing
what can you tell us? What can you tell us about the plot of American Idiot? There is another song on the album called Jesus of Suburbia that eventually came out. It was like the fifth single off the record, right?
Yeah. I don't know enough about the rock opera, about the whole album. I know this song really well. I know a couple songs of the album, but I don't really know the overarching theme of Jesus of Suburbia. Honestly, I'm a little confused about how this is anti-Bush. The whole album's anti-Bush. But didn't really make it into the title.
American Idiot.
Yeah.
Stop. Wait, really?
Are you just learning this? You're just figuring this out? That the most supreme American idiot of all is George W. Bush?
Are you pranking us?
No, I didn't know this.
Yeah. He's the American idiot.
I thought
Jesus of Suburbia
was the... Because he says, I want to be American. Like, I thought it was about... I'm sorry, I'm spiraling right now. I thought he was saying like society is idiotic, not that one particular guy.
Yeah. Yeah, that we're all idiots in this capitalist American hegemony, man. You thought it was more general.
Yeah, this is a very anti-Iraq war album.
Yeah.
Very anti-Iraq war.
There's definitely a little bit of what you're saying, that like we're all participating in this society that's so materialistic and whatever. But there's one supreme idiot here.
And it, yeah, and for that reason, you know, he's at fault, but I can stay in a hotel for 5 months with a mini fridge, and I'm not part of the capitalistic society.
Oh.
Oh my God. He admitted it.
Wow.
He admit Ruben. I know him.
You know Ruben Rabassa? Ruben?
Ruben Rabassa. Yes.
Wow. How did you meet Ruben Rabassa?
He's worked with my brother. My brother's a theater director in Miami.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh my God. How blessed.
Oh my God. He admit it.
Oh my God.
He admit it.
Billy Joe Armstrong admit it. He's an idiot too, spending all of our money.
He really had quite a breakout role in the new Father of the Bride.
Oh, he was
hilarious.
A lot
of Ruben Rabassa in Father of the
Bride. I love Ruben Rabassa. I love Ruben Rabassa and Ruben Rabassa, you know?
Yeah, all of the above.
Here, I don't want to come off as a hater because I do really appreciate this song. I think what I find interesting is the meaning it had for me, and then how dumb that meaning is, and then how the album's called American Idiot and it's shitting on society, but then they're like these multi-millionaires, which is fine, and I applaud them, and I think they should be. They make good art.
On this podcast, we try to split the diff between hating and loving. Like, sometimes you want to let the hate flow through you.
Let the hate flow through.
But yes. It is possible to hate and love the same song.
Yes.
Like, you got into this song for all the reasons they wanted you to.
I bought into it.
Yes, and sometimes you feel lonely. Hello?
When you hit 12, 13, 14, your feelings are just more feely than your feelings are now.
Mm-hmm. And you definitely can't understand that anyone has ever felt those before.
And so this song is just really popping off for
it is.
For the demographic group that is between adolescence and say 25 when your brain is fully formed.
Yeah, that's true.
And for then once you age out of like the 25 zone, your brain is now fully formed. You look back at this with some nostalgia, but you also look back at it as like, were my feelings really that strong? They couldn't have been, but guess what? They were. If you've ever worked at a summer camp for teens,
I have not.
You realize being a teenager is a very intense experience.
Yeah, it's a lot.
A lot of feelings to feel.
Yeah, Andrew has both been a teen and worked as a camp counselor for teens.
I feel sorry for you.
Yeah, you can see both sides of the coin there.
That's awful. They scare me. Teenagers scared me. They're the scariest people in the world.
And when I was an angsty teen.
You were a teen too?
No, I never was a teen.
Okay, back into the post-chorus. A literal whine as a lyric.
Love it. I love putting the whine in.
Rip it off the guitar solo. I always love it when a guy is the lead singer and the lead guitarist.
So what do the other guys do? They just play drums?
Bass player, drummer.
Bass player and drummer.
But I mean, they might as well not even be in the band.
Because you know what?
He's walking alone.
He's walking alone.
He doesn't know about Mike Dirnt.
Okay. Ooh, is that the major three chord?
Oh, come on.
Oh, God.
I'm mad props to Billy Joe. The man is writing the songs. He's fronting the band and he plays the guitar
solos.
And
he's doing it with such a wide stance. His legs are so far out and his guitar is so low. How do you do that?
Yeah, you're a guitarist and a gymnast.
His guitar is like almost at his knees. I got my guitar way up here. You know, playing it like some sort of chump from 1930.
Why do you think is it because it's like, I'm going to make it harder for me?
I think it's so it looks like he's scratching his balls.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's my guess.
It's masculine posturing. This is your version of like, you're not an athlete, you're a rocker. How do I express my testosterone and my masculinity?
I'm going to be pricking at my balls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is not very cool. This move.
But
this
here.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like
something.
You're
going to have to describe it for our audio-only audience exactly what you're doing here.
He just gets his electric guitar like almost down to the knees. He's got this really wide stance,
mm-hmm.
and he's just rocking so hard. I'm like up here above my nipples, you know, playing my guitar. That's how lame I am. Got to look cooler than that if you're going to be the lead singer and lead guitarist.
You're trying to wear your own guitar as a cravat.
Yes.
Yeah, meanwhile,
I'm cravat.
Billy
high.
Joe.
I can't believe
Billy
you figured
Joe
out a way to say cravat. I don't know how you did that. You just dropped it in.
I just snuck in. I like to sneak in one vocab word per ep.
Yeah.
Love it.
I mean, if you're stuck on cravat and don't know how to say it, you're ever in a tough social situation, you just say ascot instead. You know?
Ascot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ascot.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Billy Joe's got this low slung guitar like he's trying to aerate his scrotum.
And do you like that?
I need a vocab word sound bite. Just ping.
Yeah, I think.
Got it in like a coin. Okay. Or, ka-ching.
Or SAT, you know?
I walk this empty street. Breaking it back down to the Chummy Chums on the acoustic guitar. Back on the boulevard. Never really left it. No one else is here.
That's another reason why you think of the verse when you think of this song, is that last verse
I walk
with everything dropped out is just a recap of all the previous verses.
See?
The Boulevard of Broken Dreams. It's just like... That one I'm okay with, though, because it's less of a like...
I beg of your attention for the absolutely bomb outro. That they did it. They came up with a new musical idea, and it shreds.
Very simple, but not something you've heard anywhere else in the song, so it really, really hooks you.
They hooked you with the feels. They tricked the bubblegum pop girls into listening to this song, and now the girls like rock.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, this is where you like, what's this called? Head?
This is headbanging.
Banging.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Da na na na.
Oh.
Even that last chord, new thing. Boom, boom,
right, da, I mean, the lyrics are, I think, the problem for me. Because I think everything you're explaining, my shame around it has more to do with like what the attempted shame. Symbolism is. And then what I like about it is what you, like, this accessibility to headbanging and the feels that the sounds make.
God bless the accessibility to headbanging. That's what they did.
The accessibility, you know, to headbanging.
They brought it to us. Yes. I have the freedom to headbang now.
Yes, yes, me.
And I do. On that outro,
completely, you do.
Completely new musical idea. They're not just playing the chorus again. It's like completely new idea, and it shreds.
Wait, sorry, what do you mean completely new?
Meaning like the guitar solo is a new, yeah, it's a new thing that's happening in the song, but chord-wise, the band is just playing the chorus again. You know, it's just the same music of the chorus that now, instead of singing, they're playing a guitar solo of. But what we just heard in the outro, that's not... the chummy chum chum chummy chummy chum right. chum of the verse, nor is it walk a my shed. It's not the same chords from the chorus. It's a completely new musical idea. Bow 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 down 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 down. We haven't heard that, and it's a little bit metal. Like they're pushing us through rock towards metal to give us the freedom to headbang on the
lyrics,
way out of this thing.
The lyrics don't build. But the sound does. And that's how they trick you.
Wow.
Yeah. They got us.
They got us.
They
got us
good.
But the last verse really works for me too. With everything cutting out, you just have the acoustic guitar. And like, I get what you're saying on the earlier verses. Like, the earlier verses are kind of too repetitive for me, like from an idea standpoint. Like you were talking about, Joanna, that like, well, now this verse is about the exact same thing that the last verse was about, but just with different words. But the last verse kind of works for me because it's like an exact copy. It's like, yeah, we're going back to the essence of the song. I like that, the callback stuff of the last verse.
You like the copy-paste?
Yeah. I think it works.
Wow. Never thought I'd hear Andrew say he loved the copy-paste.
Oh, I love copy-paste. Love a copy-paste.
Okay, we did a certain amount of loving and a certain amount of hating on this song.
Mm-hmm.
So this song is a huge hit. It's very beloved. We have a tall order here. And do we have enough info to go away and punch this song up?
I think we do. Unless Joanna, you know, you have any kind of last words for this song. I think Evan and I are ready to play our punch up for you.
I am so ready and also have no idea how you would punch this up. I have no clue what I'm going to listen to.
Well, that's how we feel every week, basically.
Yeah.
And most of the songs
story of our lives.
We bring onto this podcast are perfect, as is this song, and then we have to make them even more perfect.
Oh, yes, yes, perfect.
Yeah, the market has proven that this song is already nearly perfect. Sold like a billion copies.
That's true.
Introduced a whole new generation to Green Day and pop punk.
It's such a perfect song, they made it into a Broadway musical. That's crazy.
Yeah, wow.
This is a punk Broadway musical.
Yes. And there's nothing more punk than Broadway.
I walk a lonely road, only road that I have. When you're a jet, you're a jet. Dun, 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 dun.
And curtain.
Let's punch it.
Punch it!
We are back. We're talking about Green Day's Boulevard of Broken Dreams and the feelings that they made so many feel.
Mm-hmm. So many.
There's a lot of feelings, more feelings than there are later.
I think their whole career has just been killing it on the teenage feels. You know, yeah. You have the time to listen to me whine? Hello, yeah. I'm neurotic to the bone.
Yeah, and they just held on to that feeling. They were, I mean, how old were they when that song came out? They were probably still teenagers. They certainly weren't 25. Their brains weren't fully developed. This, you know, my neurological thing I'll grab onto today.
Yeah, yeah. And here they are in their 30s, still nailing it. Just still with the feeling of being a lonely teen.
Teen feels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what we felt like, you know, they could use a little help with. We identified how this song really cuts through. It got the message through for sure.
Yes.
But it's a little bit repeaty.
Totes.
And maybe we could assist.
Okay.
In improving the song by just getting a few more details in about how do we understand these feelings.
Got it.
How do we understand these feelings?
You, there's a word in Spanish called indagar, which is you dug deeper.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
You dug deeper into the feels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Our punch-ups are always
better.
The intention is always indagar.
Always, always. I mean, if I could describe you guys in one word, it would definitely be indagar. Yeah, for sure. Brand. That's your brand, si. For sure.
Y, indagar, y, gringo.
Indagar, el gringo indaga. That's how that's how you conjugate it.
Yeah.
Los gringos indagan.
Los gringos who are digging deeper. All the way. Okay, so I present to you the punched up version of Boulevard of Broken Dreams.
Oof.
You don't change this. You don't change the tremolo pedal, that's for sure.
Just got it lined up right on the beat.
I am the only lone, homely teen with feelings so full blown. Somehow no one knows they're all chose, that's why I'm so alone.
That's it. No one else gets it. That's the whole point.
I know it's only me. I'm a fully scarred and lonely teen. Entirely unique. I'm the only lonely teen you just can't know. You just can't know you're such a chode. You just can't know you're such a... That's why I changed my normal lunchtime seat. Not coming back until you invite me. Just sitting all alone quite publicly. I'm sad the whole school should know. Has anyone noticed me? Maybe Emma from chemistry. There's no one quite like me.
That's the real question.
The office and posting edgy me.
Yes.
Watch Riverdale and think about how Jughead and I, we walk alone.
There's no one else like me. That's
yes. That's
the crux of it.
Jughead's the single.
That's what teenagers think.
Yeah.
Like me except for Catcher in the Rye. I've read that book 8 times. Holden Caulfield, we're identical. I walk surrounded by dumb stiffs. I'm a protagonist. Why did you say you like that book as much as me? Why have you said that you are also lonely? No one could also feel these lonely feelings. Do you want to hang Friday though?
Oh.
You lonely too? Maybe we could come over.
Hang out.
Is such a phony.
Oh, no. Not anymore.
Jughead, Holden, and me.
Thought about changing this? Couldn't change it.
No.
It's too simple. Lonely, but rockin', has a lot of feelings.
When I go to university, won't be a fully scarred and lonely teen. Meet the friends of my dreams. They'll see that I am Holden Caulfield. My new friends, Lonely Road.
My new friends will get me.
My cool friends fit in some fresh hot topics.
I won't be sad next year.
Because I'll revamp myself.
Director energy. Together we're alone.
Okay, I changed the outro.
Oh, really?
It's so good because they added some more notes. So I thought, what if there were a couple extra notes?
Huh.
Might get even more metal. Think about more notes.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, adding more. Yeah. Yeah. Headbanging for the headbanging.
Yes.
For the headbanging.
More notes.
I'm very angry.
Just keep the surprises coming. Surprise worked. More surprise.
My mom was going to hate this. That is so perfect and encapsulates how in your teenage life you think you are so special because you're sad.
Yes.
But everyone is sad. You are not special whatsoever. And I
in
love
the
that.
Best way.
Yeah.
You're not special.
You're not alone.
Yeah, you're not alone.
You're not alone.
Yeah.
But if you keep this attitude up, if you don't grow out of it, at age 30, you're walking up to a lady in a bar who's wearing a Catcher in the Rye t-shirt, and you're like, can you even name one character from Catcher in the Rye? Can you even name one character
from Catcher
in the Rye?
Literally the one character?
You think Holden Caulfield is just yours. That's empirically false. A lot of people read that book.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people read it 8 times.
What I loved about what you did is also Catcher in the Rye is the book equivalent of this song.
Yes. Yeah.
Every kid in my class was like, I'm fucking Holden and you don't get me. And it's like, everyone read it. It was a class assignment. This wasn't you choosing something.
Yeah. Yeah. Whenever someone would say that to me, I would just be like, that guy is such a phony.
Such a phony.
What a phony.
What a phony, bro.
What a phony. They read Catcher in the Rye. They didn't get it like I did.
Yeah,
they're
no,
a phony.
No.
Just
they're
imagining
phony.
Salinger being the Billy Joe Armstrong of his day and just being like, I get teen feelings.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get the teen loneliness.
Do you know what JD stands for in Salinger?
Jilly Doe.
Yes. It's Jilly Doe Salinger.
Jilly Doe Salinger.
Yes, Jilly Doe Salinger.
Oh
my God.
Jilly Doe Salinger sounds like a naturalist, I think. Mm, you know, Jilly just the Doe. Sound of a name that just conjures a person,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Jilly Doe.
Yeah. If you met like a Gertrude Hempstead, you know she's a member of parliament. You don't. Nobody has to tell you. You could tell by the sound of her name.
Yes.
Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Member of Parliament.
You know he's going to be a Tory.
Yeah, mine was fictional. Yours was real.
Mine is real, yeah.
Yeah.
But Jilly Doe Salinger.
I said naturalist. That sounded sort of like Audubon-y to me.
Yeah.
Jilly Doe Salinger.
Audubon-y?
Yeah, like the Audubon guy, Society
you know,
is
the guy. The
is a birding society.
A burning society?
Birding.
A
not,
birding
not
society?
Not the Audo.
As in they go birding?
They yes. go birding, yes.
Birding, yeah.
Because it was founded by someone with the last name Audubon.
Not the Autobahn like in Germany, the highway, but somebody's last name, Autobahn, B-O-N, that was so into looking at birds that they named a whole society of bird watchers after him.
You know, yeah. As you're just
how did
this,
we get here? Oh my God.
I don't know, but I feel like I'm walking a lonely road by myself. With you guys, but we're talking. I don't understand what you're saying, so
I'm
I feel
sorry.
Alone.
I'm so sorry because this is what has what we've done to this podcast by bringing our brother energy on here.
You guys mind melded in front of me. You said Jilly Doe. You guessed what he was gonna say.
I did. Yeah, I mind melded with him.
That was psychotic.
We walk a very close-knit road.
It was kind of disappointing I didn't get to say my own punchline.
Yeah,
but it was also extremely satisfying that my punchline was so clear that someone else could guess it.
It wasn't that clear.
You didn't know that JD stood for Jilly Doe.
I never knew that JD stood for Jilly Doe. Never.
Yeah.
Never.
But
I do believe
it. Holden Caulfield, Jughead from the hit CW show Riverdale,
mm-hmm.
and now Billy Joe Armstrong, just all walking together,
mm-hmm.
alone, the three of them, Jughead with his dumb hat, Holden Caulfield with whatever he has in Catcher in the Rye, I don't remember.
Depression.
Just walking down that road together.
Yeah.
That's it.
Good luck, guys. good luck making friends in college and not being sad anymore at age 18.
Yeah, you're going to go to Colgate and everything's going to make sense for you.
This song's been punched up, guys.
It's so good.
I feel great about it. We figured out teenage feelings, finally. Just gave it a little lift, give it a little help. And a couple extra notes at the end. And
that I forgot about that.
It's a little, you know, you got to admit, you listen to like a couple extra notes in there. It does make it more metal.
Makes you sit up and straighten your chair.
Makes it a little more metal.
Gets your spine tingling.
Yeah, they went pretty metal.
Yeah.
Let's just advance the ball a little bit.
But just don't ask me what the notes were. I just want to stay ahead.
I think it was a C.
C. This is just a story too long for the end of this podcast. But in this really sick, psychotic way, Evan and I, our very, very, very first music teacher, who we had from kindergarten all the way through sixth grade, that music teacher you have once a week, mm-hmm. you know, when you just are doing music a little bit, she had this pet psychotic theory that she could teach her students perfect pitch, which
is
totally false.
She had perfect pitch.
She had perfect pitch.
She thought you could
teach
it.
And she was a lunatic. She thought perfect pitch could be taught. So every week, she started class by saying, like, okay, everybody sing a C at the same time. Just cacophony. 25 kids at the same time just going like, C, 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 C. Just sing the first note that comes to their head. It's never a C. And then she would play the C and be like,
C.
You guys are getting closer. You're wrong.
Is it this? C.
Yeah, that's it. You got it.
That's it. Yeah.
You got it.
No, I thought I did.
But she, in her twisted mind, like really thought that through like 6 or 7 years of coaching, she would eventually get us all to be able to sing perfect C's. And she never did it once in her entire career. This is just,
I mean, I love an
really
optimist.
Weird way to begin a music education.
I do love an optimist.
You're right. It's a beautiful, it's like a literary form of like optimistic tragedy. She's a tragic hero.
She is a tragic hero
with
this
Sisyphean idea. Vocab word,
but it's also like she has perfect pitch. It's like a 7-footer trying to teach me to dunk a basketball. A 7-foot-tall man is like, why don't you just dunk it like this?
Yeah,
and he hops
like
up
this.
And dunks it.
Exactly.
He doesn't even have to hop. He's just dunking it.
Yeah, it's like, why don't you not understand?
Perfect pitch. I think it's genetic. Well, this is too far afield, but actually, a lot of Basques have perfect pitch, so maybe it's cultural. Maybe it's Basque genetics. I don't know. Anyway, we're wrapping up the podcast. We're not going to talk about Basques.
Nope.
Why not?
And
I mean,
when we wrap up the podcast, we always wrap up, Joanna, mm-hmm. with one last segment called Walk-In Music. Where we talk about a song you would play when walking into an event. Maybe it's a wedding. Maybe you're walking into a more professional setting. Like
I'll go first because I rarely get to do this, which is a real-life walk-in song. I'm not making up a fiction here. My setting is walking into a cover band concert at camp. We talked about a lot of teenage feelings, and boy, what better time for them to come out than the drama and fun and deliciousness of it, what it is to be a teenager at summer camp. And I played in a band one summer at camp, and we played this song, and this was my version of coming out to try to posture about like how cool I was. You think about Billie Joe, the low slung guitar, like what kind of message is she trying to send? You know, like, look at me, and this is my look at me song. From nearly the same era as Green Day's Dookie, I think, like within a year or so.
Oh, I want to see if they have the California accent.
It's this song called Good by Better Than Ezra. Weird band name.
I feel the era already.
Looking around the house.
This is from that time in our history in which there was a whole chart called Alternative.
Yeah. The only reason I know the song is because I heard it coming out of your room so many times.
Yeah.
It's
me
good.
Trying to learn it. It's catchy. Yeah.
I don't think... It's like I'm cool, but I'm also like accessible.
Yes. That's what I was going for. I'm cool, but accessible. Slightly whiny. Not as whiny as Billy Joe.
No.
I'm not asking you to spend some time listening to me whine.
This is when you had a full kit set up in your room, so you're probably just blasting this on the stereo and just, like, hitting the ride cymbal as hard as a 15-year-old can.
Oh, hell yeah.
Right here.
Yeah.
It's got headbangy.
Yep.
I don't
know
what
he's
saying.
It's a little bit
whiny. There's not one word I understand, but I love the sentiment.
Except for this part where he's kind of jamming out saying, good, good. It's a little bit whiny, but not too whiny for me. Anyway, that's my real-life walk-in song.
I love that.
Trying to impress chicks at camp.
I love it.
Thanks.
I'm impressed.
Andrew, what'd you bring to the pod?
Okay, I am moving to a new city.
Mm-hmm.
I'm walking into it for some reason, just on the middle of the double yellow. with the person I'm moving to town to.
Uh-huh.
But we're together, so I'm happy.
Oh. Oh.
And the song goes a little something like this. You know, just nice acoustic guitar vibe. It's new city, just strutting our stuff down the middle of the double yellow.
Oh, this is sentimental.
Yeah.
Holding hands.
Ooh. With that slide guitar, that Duane Allman slide guitar.
Yeah, are you... Crossroads, it even mentions a road.
Yeah.
Great tie-in.
Perfect
tie-in. I guess the person I'm with is named Melissa, because okay. The song is called Sweet Melissa, one of the best Allman Brothers songs.
Allman Brothers.
Ooh.
Sweet Melissa. Melissa. You're moving to a new town with Sweet Melissa. This ain't no lonely road.
No.
This is
a
crossroads.
I'm with her, and I know I'm with her. We're not walking down the street together, and I'm like...
Where is she?
Here I am, all alone.
Trapped in your
it's
thoughts.
It's tough to move to a city by yourself.
Completely ignoring Mike and Trey.
We've done a lot of talking about whether music videos are canon or not in the song world.
Yeah.
But 100%, I feel like now we've crossed the Rubicon of... acknowledging that
the Boulevard of Broken Dreams,
almost all music videos are part of the canon of their songs.
For sure, the Boulevard of Broken Dreams one is.
Anything between 1985 and 2005, at least.
Yes.
Yeah.
During MTV's heyday.
Yeah.
What's your walk-in song?
I dream of going to my 20-year high school reunion and getting there a little later than everyone else.
Okay.
And then kicking the door open. And then this song playing.
What?
You know it on the first note.
You know it on the first note.
Oh, yeah. Look, this song is...
Are you wearing the jumpsuit?
I'm wearing a sensible business suit.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's a grown-up version of the jumpsuit. This song, for me, was the song that like made pop and Britney Spears cool to the people that... would shit on me for liking Britney Spears.
Wow.
So it was the accessible pop song for those that were alternative.
Yes, it's like the reverse Green Day.
It's when the reverse Green Day.
They teased the rock to the people that are listening to pop.
Green Precisely. Day is pulling you into rock. This is pulling Ian, this illegal CD
the
pirate,
CD
into the world of pop.
He's going, yeah. He burned, he downloaded on LimeWire right. This song.
Yeah,
this
rockers just, don't listen to Baby One More Time or Genie in a Bottle.
Yeah.
But they will get down on Toxic.
They were making fun of you just a year or two ago for
Here
that.
Here comes,
and
oh,
now,
baby.
The Woo! Taste of your lips, I'm on a ride? Mm. You're toxic?
Yes,
I'm slipping under. I mean,
But Joanna, come on. This the 20th high school reunion. This is a very high stakes thing you've set up for yourself. Like, what is playing out?
I mean, here's the thing. I used to do a choreographed dance to this song in high school. Every party. Including my 17th birthday, I did it on stage.
So
I did it.
Talk about feeling
on
feelings.
Stage. So this is also a real life walk-in song. Like this.
It was a real life. I'm going to do it almost like for the nostalgia of the other people. Like, hey, do you guys remember when I did this and I wasn't embarrassed somehow?
You're going to do it because they would want you to do it.
But also, it's like me paying homage to the younger me who had the guts to be like, yeah, I like Britney. And this song rocks, bitches. And I walk this lonely road?
Yeah.
No, because you all like it with me.
Yes.
Wow.
Yo, toxic.
Yes. Okay, I want to be there for this. I love that this is a real life. This is part of your history.
100%.
Actually just busting out a dance to this song, and you're going to bring it back in this fiction of your high school reunion.
Yes. Yes. If you ask anyone from my high school, what does toxic remind you of? They'll say that crazy theater girl coming in and dancing and us staring at her and like demanding attention while she...
Just feeling her feelings.
Just feeling my freaking feelings.
Yeah. You were feeling lonely and you needed to express it through choreography.
No one else here at this high school is toxic
no
as
one.
Me.
I'm toxic.
I'm the one who's toxic.
Wow. I'm toxic and I'm on a ride, baby.
amazing pick, amazing scenario, Joanna.
Thank you. It's a dream. It might be a real scenario in a few years. Who knows?
Joanna, thank you so much for coming on to Punch with the Jam. We really appreciate it.
Oh, this is what brothers do for other brothers. So
check out Hyphenated, her podcast. We're on it at some point. I think it was because the way our editing schedule works. I think we're probably on it a couple weeks ago on your podcast.
Yes. Yes, so check it out.
Check out Hyphenated. Where can people find you on Instagram and Twitter, Joanna?
Instagram, Johaus. And Twitter, my last name's impossible to spell. So just like, honestly, Google
Joanna.
And then Venezuela, and I pop up.
Yeah, then it Joanna Venezuela.
It just pops up. There's not a lot of Joannas in Venezuela.
You're not the top Joanna, but you're the top Venezuelan Joanna.
Yeah. Yes.
That's great. As long as you can own one geography, then
you're good.
Yeah, you're doing great. And as an influencer, that's where you
want
to be.
That's all you want. And if you put neurotic Joanna, I'm like on the second page.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's everything going for me.
As with every week and as with every punch up, you can get the punch up this week, the Boulevard of Broken Dreams punch up on our Patreon. That's patreon.com/Gregory Brothers. And you can follow the podcast on Twitter or Instagram at Punch Up the Jam. Thanks so much for being here, Joanna.
Loved it.
And we'll be back next Thursday. We'll see you soon.
I'll be back too.
I'm really going to miss you.
Yeah.
It's going to be lonely without you.
You've been listening to Punch Up the Jam.
That was a HeadGum Original.